listeners, and welcome to episode 2 of Payments Radio, a podcast brought to you by PPRO. PPRO builds local payments infrastructure designed to help businesses gain access to new markets and new customers. PPRO powers local payments for PSPs, banks, payment gateways, and enterprises with payment platforms. My name is Megan Johnson, your host of Payments Radio, and today I'm joined by James Booth, Head of Partnerships, looking after EMEA, and Moyad Saeed Ali, Senior Partner Development Manager, both coming to us from PPRO and both based in London. Welcome, James and Moyad.
Thanks for having us, Megan. Good to be chatting with you today.
Great. So in today's episode, we will be recapping our thoughts on merchant payment ecosystem. MPE is the event for those in the payments world. Historically, it's taken place in Berlin, but in line with all other events, with the majority of 2020 and in 2021, MPE was a virtual event this year. So I'd like to kick off the podcast with talking about, what was the thoughts on kind of the virtual or digital event? How did it compare to previous years? Did you miss the nice Berlin vibe?
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to start off. I mean, I think it's a bit of a there's lots of pros and cons with it. I think ultimately all of us in sales, especially Moyad and myself, who are more sales focused or more commercially focused in the business, we're looking forward to the next face-to-face event, that's for sure. So for us, socializing in Berlin, going for drinks at the end of the day is certainly something that we look forward to. But in saying that, it's been an interesting past 12 months, especially in the trade show realm, because there's been a few pros to some of these shows and actually quite a few cons. So it's been a mixed bag. I think overall we're looking forward to going back to the shows. But it's been a lot of learnings that I think we've experienced from doing a virtual show. So just one last thing to add. I mean, you raise a good point there, that the platforms have caught up. Certainly they weren't there in a pre-pandemic world. So that's probably a huge pro, because we can start using that in other shows. And I think we might start seeing a lot of, let's say, micro shows popping up besides the big face-to-face shows that might happen on an annual basis. But it makes it a little bit tricky for us who are potentially presenting at these shows, because the type of content that you have to present in a virtual environment or the type of discussions that you're having in a virtual environment are very different to the discussions that you'll be having in a face-to-face environment. You have to completely tailor what you're doing and almost compress it into a 15-minute slot. And that's all you got. That's almost the only kind of attention span that you're going to get from your audience in the day, because they're battling everything from emails to calls to putting a little session in between a whole bunch of meetings that happen in the day, compared to in the old days where they would block out a whole day because they were there face to face.
Great. And I mean, I guess in general or historically, what's been the format of MPE? Is it similar to, you know, a Money 2020, or, you know, what makes it such an important and big event in the world of payments?
So I think from MPE standpoint, I think one of the big attractions for us as a business to attendance is the fact that it's actually a show that's on a smaller scale compared to Money 2020. Money 2020 covers a variety of verticals. It covers payments, banking, identity, risk, for example. Yep. Whereas MPE, it's a more focused show from that perspective, as well as the attendees that attend the show in person are our direct contacts who ultimately we're wanting to engage with and speak to.
A lot of the times, obviously, when merchants go to these shows, they're being sold at. Whereas I think a lot of time, there's a lot of content, a lot of really useful stuff that they can take on board, take back to their headquarters or whatever that is, and actually utilize that information and not get the noise of getting solutions being sold to them. So I think actually that this platform, this virtual platform, probably fits them better than someone like us.
I mean, exactly. I mean, I think you've raised a good point, and it's also an opportunity for some of these shows going forward, in that a lot of great content is being generated, but it's not being reused a lot of the time. You go to a show, if you can't attend two talks, you'd attend one and you'd miss out on the second talk or the second topic. Whereas because it's virtual, it's all being recorded, it's on the right platform. They're almost creating a payments Netflix that you can just go on the later stage and rewatch all the talks, or rewatch the ones that are equivalent to you, if it makes sense, which is, which is a big opportunity on the one side. So certainly from the merchants attending these shows, it was probably a great success for them. Difficult for us to tell because we're on the other side.
Yeah, I mean, I think it, from my perspective, speaking and these virtual events, it's really hard not to be able to see the audience. And I think, you know, every one of us who has been attending these events misses being able to really see people and engage in that aspect. It's been difficult, some positives, some negatives, but hopefully perhaps next year we can go back to the physical events, and who knows, maybe they'll start to take a hybrid approach. But I mean, getting into kind of MPE this year, so it took place between, I think, the 22nd to the 25th of February. What were some of the key takeaways for you both?
Yeah, I mean, there were quite a few key takeaways, but for me, one of the most important ones, and I mean, we might sound like a bit of a broken record because it's been one of the hot topics recently, but it's definitely been the overall rise of digital payments in the ecosystem. And it's not digital payments in that we're doing payments online in a digital environment. It's the stepping away from a traditional, let's say, omni-channel approach and embedding digital payments in face-to-face type environments. So introducing QR codes into checkout carts, app-based payments for micro merchants, for example, are becoming very popular, and having these solutions available to everyone. They've been available for years in other parts of the world, but Europe and the US and other, let's say, Western economies never took them on. It was never a priority. And I think because of what's happened over the past year or so, we're now really starting to see the impact of a digital-first approach to payments versus an omni-channel approach where you have digital on the one side and you have face-to-face or point-of-sale on the other side. It's actually everything's digital, and you cater to that from a first perspective.
Yeah, so was the consensus that this was primarily driven by COVID and in the past 12 months, this push towards truly digital, almost like a digital omni experience? So what are all the digital payments types? Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it was quite impressive, because obviously everything happened last year, everybody went virtual last year, everybody kind of got locked down, and there was a lot of talk about going digitally native, and there was a lot of talk about a digital first approach in online payments and this huge shift towards e-commerce. And what we saw was a massive shift to e-commerce, but it was a massive shift to the merchants and the payment players who were in the right position at the right time to capitalize on it. So I think they saw a massive spike in volume, they saw great traction. But this year, I think what we've seen is more of a level divide, in that a lot of other players out there have adapted their solution to take advantage of not only the rise in traditional e-commerce, but also the point-of-sale payments, bringing them online, bringing other players into the realm. And it showed that actually a lot got done in the industry within a year, and there was really a huge transformation in how payments businesses build their product.
Yeah, and I'd probably also just say, that if you go back a few years within the payments industry, it was all about omni-channel, before it was all about single channel. You focused on POS and then you focused on e-commerce as a secondary mindset. And then it kind of became into almost one thing, but it was still kind of siloed in that sense.
Yeah.
So that's where the omnichannel part developed. And I would say probably developed over 5 or 6 years, but actually in a year, if anything, it's been a unified or a unification of the commerce that's taken place in a matter of a year. And people are jumping on this unification as fast as they can, whether it's from merchant demand or the payment service providers actually providing that service, and the ability to kind of change that technology as quickly as possible, the service offering as quickly as possible, is again, been quite impressive. So that change over a year has been absolutely massive. And I think throughout the event, you could easily see that, you know, we went through a new norm when COVID hit.
Yeah.
And now everyone's thinking about this other new norm when things kind of go back to some form of normality,
but
it's not going to be like it was last year. And everyone's kind of developing their solution for them.
Exactly, because last year was all about it was about damage control, putting together something very quickly just to cater for the new normal, as you mentioned. Whereas now, people are not building. Payments businesses are not building a solution for now. They're building a solution for the new normal. What happens when we all go back to our daily lives and commuting and traveling, etc.? And that's going to be a different experience. That's going to be a digital experience.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, what everyone's experienced in the past 12 months has been a strong push towards a more digital lifestyle. You know, and I think, of course, that's going to extend and stay in payments for the foreseeable future. I mean, taking, I guess, a step back away from MPE, what's the impact been on PPRO in the past 12 months then?
So PPRO, obviously, because we are primarily e-commerce focused, we do some in-app payments and some in-store payments through the likes of Alipay or WeChat Pay. Mm-hmm. But for us, we live in an e-commerce world or a digital-first world in that regard. So we've seen a lot of engagement from the overall ecosystem to work with us. We're seeing a clear shift towards these local forms of payments that are digitally native, that are e-commerce or online native. So for us, it's been amazing. Obviously, we work in the sales side, so we're gonna be quite positive about it.
Yeah.
But it really has been a transformational year in that the overall industry has woken up to this approach, and we're there to support it. And I think it's been very exciting in that front.
Mm. And what about, were there any topics or kind of themes coming out of MPE that looked at particular geographies? You know, was there a focus on APAC or North America or LATAM?
For sure. I think, if anything, within Europe, I wouldn't say it's a saturated market in that sense. There's a lot of development happening, especially obviously the last year or so. But I think there's a lot of growth and a lot of organic growth happening in APAC. And I think the same would be said of Latin America. I think the fact that people or consumers in certain markets typically would buy goods or services in a physical environment, and suddenly there's a shift in terms of, well, actually, we need to move to some sort of digital environment.
Mm-hmm.
That adoption of digital payments, or at least ways in which people can pay their merchants, has seen a tremendous growth in terms of e-commerce.
Exactly. So I think especially from a cross-border perspective, I mean, at the show, we had a lot of interest from APAC, especially. I think the partners who have been EMEA focused have looked at local payment methods and discovered that locally. I think that time has come where, I mean, I agree with Moya, the market's not saturated, but everybody understands bank transfer payment methods, e-wallets. They've built this solution maybe in a local context. Now that they've become comfortable with these new flows, they're starting to expand further. APAC was the first market some of them looked at, just because from a payment flow perspective, it's more similar, so it's easier to implement. I think also from if you look at all of the other areas of the solution, well, the other parts of the solution that merchants and PSPs need to build, from shipping to risk to all of that, there's been a lot of plug and play functionality in APAC, which has been the first port of call. And then LATAM is becoming very interesting right now. There's a little bit more complexity in that region because of tax, FX, and just money remittance regulation. Mm-hmm. But it's becoming very, very exciting.
Okay. And I guess what are some of the big thoughts around disruptions to the industry? How was disruption discussed in the terms of kind of what to expect this year?
If I could just very quickly come in, sorry, James, I know you were going to say something there.
Go for it.
I think disruption. So in Europe, and I'm picking on one particular subject I heard. And I've been hearing for the past 2 or 3 years, which is actually about open banking in Europe for sure. Obviously, there are other regions that are kind of catching up to the concept of open banking. There's certain regulations that are coming into place in outside of Europe. But within Europe, open banking has been discussed for a number of years. And I think what was refreshing to hear is actually something that's new in some markets within Europe. So, for example, in the UK, it's not going to be an instant adoption. Whereas before, it's been very much a sales pitch style about open banking. I think what I've heard more so during the events was actually it's a slow thing, it's going to take time before that trust is built with consumers to be actually that would actually use something like this. So for me, that disruption within the European payments ecosystem is going to take a while, but I think it's going to be something that's going to that definitely will disrupt the traditional rails, and certainly from a payments perspective. So,
I completely agree there. I think now's the time where this is the year that we'll see some disruption on that front. Mm-hmm. Especially because of the fact that consumer preferences have changed, how we interact online and how we interact even at the checkout has changed. We've seen AISP services, so account information service provider services, in the market for quite a while. And that's essentially, those apps that will aggregate your bank view across multiple banks into a single app. We've seen that for a while, mm-hmm. But I think we're going to start seeing that on the payment side, and we're going to see more integration, end-to-end integration from a payment initiation standpoint, as it becomes more ubiquitous across the EU, and as consumers start using these rails.
Definitely. And I guess does the cryptocurrency kind of topic ever feature into MPE?
I think at the moment, crypto is going to appear at every single trade show. At the moment, in what context it's difficult to tell. I think crypto is still very early in its development. There's still debates as to whether it's a payment mechanism, whether it's a store of value, whether it's the underlying rails. Who knows? But I think there's a lot of utility within the crypto market and within the underlying product, and there's a lot that can be done there. So I definitely think it's going to show up at a few more shows, and I think there's a lot of good discussions to be had around crypto.
I always find it so interesting when you see, for example, in Berlin, I'm not sure if it's the same for other parts of Germany, but I believe with Lieferando, the equivalent of Deliveroo or DoorDash, you can pay for your takeaway in Bitcoin. And I'm just like, this is crazy, the choice is there. I don't know how many people are doing it or if they'd want to do it, but...
Well, I think that's the point. If you offer Bitcoin acceptance today, I don't think anybody that owns a decent amount of Bitcoin will want to spend it.
Exactly.
It's increasing in value by so much, or decreasing depending on the past. But as I mentioned, there's a lot of interesting use cases there. So I think there's definitely something there, and that's why the market's taken off, and that's why a lot of institutional investors are jumping onto the bandwagon, and that's why banks are looking at this technology. But I'm definitely not intelligent enough to be able to predict what's going to happen.
I think that there needs to be an almost shift in the way people think about cryptocurrencies. I mean, the name of cryptocurrencies, it's not really yet seen as a currency, as a form of value that's held within some sort of digital ecosystem. God knows what it is still, but anyway. But the point being, it's still seen as an asset. You know, that you can own as part of some sort of investment portfolio. I think the adoption of cryptocurrencies as a currency is still some way off, I think. But the natural progression is for it to be used as some sort of payment acceptance. Natural progression thing.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that was a large part of the Libra network's strategy in that front. I mean, they had a good chance there, but the problem there was little trust in the overall organization. Was it there was bad press around Facebook at the time, so it was probably just bad timing on that front to launch something like that. But there'll be the next version of that, so there'll be something similar that will take off at some point.
I mean, I completely agree. I think, you know, you aren't necessarily looking at what cryptocurrencies you hold in terms of a wider digital wallet. It's more, okay, how does it sit with other assets and whatnot? So, okay, that's a interesting point. And then I guess we briefly touched upon it earlier, but I guess, you know, what about the relevance of local payment methods at checkout? You know, what's happening with this? How was this discussed at MPE? And I guess from the PPRO perspective.
So, I mean, from a local payment method perspective, and this is obviously where our expertise is, I'd say during the last year or so, it's become even more relevant, because if you think about it, local payment methods by their own nature are digital forms of payments, effectively. What's happening now, obviously, is some of these local payment methods are transitioning into in-store type payment methods. Mm-hmm. So obviously, for example, Klarna, you know, you could use Klarna in an install at a kiosk, point of sale. So for sure, the relevance of local payment methods is becoming even more of a thing, certainly for merchants as well. They're seeing the importance of it. I think if you also look at just general transactional growth for the traditional rails like Visa, MasterCard, there was definitely a slowing of growth in terms of transactional growth. You know, we're talking about 2-3% between 2019 and 2020, whereas the years before that it was like something like 19%, for example. So there was definitely some sort of reduction in that growth, or a slowing down in that growth, and that could almost, if you were to analyze it, could be related to the fact that, you know, people are more used to using other forms of payment, local payment methods in an e-commerce environment than physically. So that shift has almost made it even more relevant for local payment methods at checkout.
Yeah, and I think it purely comes down to consumer habits and how they've changed. Pre-pandemic, the Western world, and I want to say the Western world, or not even the Western world, the US, UK, Australia, sort of these economies, everybody walked around with a piece of plastic in their pockets, a card, and that's how they transacted. China, they would just use QR codes. A lot of Europe, they actually would just use cash because they preferred using cash. cards were rising, they were getting good traction. But now that we've all gone online, it's much easier to type in a username and password, or to scan your face, or to scan your fingerprint, than it is to go to the bedroom or the living room, find your wallet, pull out a card, type in the card number, remember all of that and check out. It's I actually can't even remember the last time I used the card online.
Yeah.
And I will, and I'm one of the, I'm definitely a statistic, but I would choose where I shop depending on some of the checkout options. You know, I can sometimes be very lazy and sit on the couch and be like, actually, I don't have my wallet with me. Is there another website that allow me to use Apple Pay where I can scan my fingerprint, or use PayPal, or use Klarna, or use whatever it is, because it's just easier.
But I think on that point, you know, we shouldn't take away the fact that, you know, some of these traditional rails will always exist, and there will be kind of part of that unified commerce that we talked about. But I think things like the fact that the Chancellor of the Exchequer in the UK mentioned something about contactless in his budget speech, i.e. he essentially increased it from 45 British pounds to 100, just puts more emphasis on the fact that it probably opens up a door for other ways in which people can pay. So contactless is one format that you can probably apply to something like QR codes. And QR codes, we know that they're quite relevant in Asia Pacific, and they're slowly kind of coming into our world in Europe as well. So it's almost opening up that door. People's mindsets are opening to different ways in which paying, apart from just taking their card out from their wallet and then putting it into a chip and pin machine. There's definitely different ways in which people could pay using the traditional rails.
Exactly. And I think, I mean, you're right. I'm not saying that the traditional rails will completely die, but I completely agree that the way you interact with those rails at the point of sale, at the checkout, that's where the disruption's occurring. And that disruption's occurring because consumer preferences have changed. And once those consumer preferences have changed, it allows you to offer different customer journeys, different user experiences, and we're ultimately going to choose the user experience that's the easiest for us, or the most seamless, or the most convenient. And that's where the exciting part of our job comes in, because that's where all of the disruption will occur, I think.
Yeah. And I think, I guess on that point, what was the consensus in terms of outlook from MPE for 2021? And then I guess kind of my last question for you both is, what is your personal outlook for the payments industry in 2021?
So to answer the MPE side, I think just to summarize, the show was great for us. It was a very good showcase. We had some good discussions, albeit in a virtual environment. I think, looking forward, I really hope next year it's going to be in person. That's for sure. If I think of the outlook from a 2021 perspective, I see an acceleration again on what we saw being developed last year. I think last year was a ground roots year. All of the strategies changed. Everybody almost paused for a few months, readjusted on their strategies. Now we're starting to see that being implemented. And I think we'll see a definite acceleration later on in the year. I don't think there's going to be as much disruption when the world opens up, because I really do think consumer preferences have changed. There will be some consumers who move back to their old ways and maybe go back to using cash or contactless or whatever it is. But I think for the majority of the population out there, a lot of the way that they're transacting today will stay. Obviously, contactless will definitely rise because we'll be more face-to-face. But overall, the way we interact and the way we think is here to stay.
Yeah, I'd probably just kind of say the same thing about the event in terms of MPE. Again, great platform. I guess the only comment I could say is I just can't wait for it just to be in real life next time around, hopefully. In terms of, I think, payments going forward and this industry that we're in, I think for sure there's that kind of blurring of lines. There's that unification of the digital payment acceptance. That's going to accelerate. That's going to continue to accelerate. And even things such as old technologies like pay-by-link solutions are going to become so relevant. It's unbelievable. I think there's going to be a different way. And I think there's obviously two sides to this. There's the consumer side and the merchant side. I think if you look at the merchant side, they've kind of been forced to trade in a different way. And they need to kind of adapt quite quickly. And I think using old solutions like pay by links and new solutions like in-app payments in a physical environment, alongside the traditional ways in which people used to pay before the pandemic, is going to create a lot more usability within from a consumer perspective.
Great. So yeah, that's all I have from my side of things. It was really good to hear about how the industry has changed, what's here to stay, what we can look forward to, and our thoughts on how expectations and experiences as consumers have changed very quickly. So Moyad and James, thank you so much for sharing your insights with us. And to our listeners, thanks for staying with us. This was episode 2, and we look forward to seeing you again. Thank you.